Carl Dreyer's 1928 silent film, The Passion of Joan of Arc, opens with a shot of the actual text of the court proceedings of Joan's trial, attesting to the fact that he wished to make a film about the trial itself. Dreyer's intention was not to make a historical documentary or a religious spectacle. He said, "I found my material in the questioning she went through during her trial." Dreyer biographer Jean Drum writes, "He knew that excessive concentration on the immediate issues of the trial was largely pointless, since they were issues that no longer moved humankind. But the terror, the naive wisdom, and the reality of Joan as a woman, not as a saint or a symbol, was no less moving in the 20th century than it would have been in the 15th. Dreyer emphasized this by shooting much of the film in close-up. His camera quietly records Joan's face, those of the judges, and those of the prison guards mocking her. Dreyer realizes in his film the drama of the face. As he said, "Nothing in the world can be compared to the human face. It is a land one can never be tired of exploring. There is no greater experience in a studio than to witness the expression of a sensitive face under the mysterious power of inspiration, to see it animated from the inside and turning into poetry." Dreyer's close-ups of René Falconetti as Joan play out the human drama, and Dreyer has been correctly lauded as a master of communicating human tragedy through close-ups of the face. In the history of film, perhaps only Ingmar Bergman can compare. That from an essay titled Contrasting Visions of a Saint by Bill Scalia in Literature Film Quarterly, January 2004. The film, The Passion of Joan of Arc, will be presented by the Susquehanna Valley Chorale with Voices of Light, a work for chorale and orchestra by Richard Einhorn. WVIA's Fiona Powell had a chance to speak with composer Richard Einhorn and SVC conductor and music director William Payne before the presentation of the film with music Saturday, March 11th at 7:30 and Sunday, March 12th at 2 at the Campus Theater in downtown Lewisburg. First, Fiona Powell asked Richard Einhorn about his inspiration to create music with this powerful movie in mind.
It is an extraordinary film. What happened was that the idea to do music predated my ever even knowing about the movie. I wanted to do a big piece on a religious topic. I really felt it was something that was of great interest to me, and in my circle of artists, religious topics were not really being seriously considered. So I thought that that was a shame, and I thought that I would do some research and find the topic, and I decided to do a very large piece. I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and a friend of mine told me that Joan of Arc was my subject, but I really didn't believe her. I thought that was nonsense. You know, I didn't know anything about Joan, and I thought, you know, she was just some legend. And then by sheer accident, I saw this movie, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, the movie really is an extraordinary masterpiece, and I knew immediately that my friend was 100% right. And so I basically dropped everything I was doing and started to plan this piece. And that's how it happened. You know, she's, of course, a much beloved here and always has been. She's the patron saint of artists. There are many, many women, many feminists who love Joan. I've even met witches that worship Joan as one of their own. But I've also know that Joan is a very complicated symbol, as you probably know. Here she's associated with artists and with feminists and with women. But of course, in France, right now, she's a symbol of the far right. So there is this split with Joan of Arc. She attracts people who would otherwise have nothing else in common with each other. And that's actually one of the most exciting things about this project. I didn't want to particularly emphasize one aspect of Joan and come down on any of the controversies. You know, were her voices from angels, or were they just a symptom of schizophrenia? You know, answering that question as an artist isn't very interesting to me. But what is interesting, and what I thought was very exciting, was to encounter Joan in all her complexity and ambiguity. And I just thought that Dreyer's film approached the subject of Joan of Arc and her life and her career in just such a fascinating way. And I just basically wanted to honor both the film and, of course, Joan of Arc herself.
The story of Joan is extraordinary, but Dreyer's film about the Passion of Joan of Arc is justifiably one of the most extraordinary films ever made, probably one of the most extraordinary silent movies ever made. It is something else, isn't it?
It's incredible. You know, what I like to say is that if you have a list of your 10 favorite films, after you see that movie, you'll have a list of 11 favorite films. It's just unbelievable. And the way in which I saw it, which was completely out of the blue, I mean, I saw it in a museum archive. I really hadn't heard anything about it or knew anything about it at all. And suddenly there it was. And it was really quite stunning to encounter it when you're not really expecting it, because most of the time, you know, we're kind of spoon-fed our great art. But to see something like this was quite extraordinary. I think what makes it so amazing for me, I think, is, first of all, the performance by Renee Falconetti as Joan of Arc, which is really, really one of the defining performances in the history of cinema, I mean, for men or for women. And it just simply transcends its time, even transcends Falconetti herself, who really never did anything after that, at least on film, or really was known for doing very much other than having done this film. The other thing I think that's really extraordinary about the film is the way in which it's shot. The camera angles are completely modern, completely original. There is this sense of naturalness in the acting. The set is very elaborate, but we barely glimpse it because of the intensity of the close-ups. And the close-ups gives a sense of the human drama, of the intimacy of the entire story, of these people crowding in on Joan and crowding in on her beliefs, on her life, literally. So there is this sense of being in the hands of an absolute master filmmaker, Dreyer, also in watching one of the greatest performances ever, ever recorded. It's really an overwhelming experience.
It's deeply shocking, isn't it? I mean, you'd think in this day and age, we couldn't see a silent movie and be shocked, but some of the camera angles and some of the shots are just deeply shocking.
Yes, you're absolutely right. There are times when Dreyer and his cinematographer, Rudolf Maté, place the camera in such a fashion that you literally don't know where the ground is. It's literally as if these people are floating in space because the camera angles are so strange. And even today, with even some of the most experimental, quote-unquote, filmmakers out there, there isn't that sense of real shock in some of the angles that you see. You're absolutely right. It's quite extraordinary. There's also some things in the film that are very, very hard to understand, and they're exciting in that because they make you think. And I think that that's one of the exciting things about this film. You see it, you're overwhelmed with it emotionally, but it also poses a lot of questions. And that's one of the exciting things because it makes you want to go deeper and learn more about Joan of Arc, learn more about the actors and actresses in the film, learn more about Dreyer and his artist. It's really one of these things where once you've seen it, you get kind of sucked into this world that's really, really quite enthralling.
Where do you begin as a composer with something like this? Do you start with an overall theme? How on earth do you tackle this?
You know, that was the easiest thing in the world. I have to say, when you're in the hands of an artist as great as Dreyer, ideas just instantly bubbled up. By the time I left the museum archives where I'd seen the film, to the time I got to the subway, I had the general idea for the piece scratched out in my mind. It was pretty obvious. Joan of Arc heard voices, so I knew I was going to do a vocal piece. What are the voices going to sing? Well, that was pretty obvious, too. They were going to sing the writings of female medieval mystics from Joan of Arc's time or before. So they would be kind of celebrating and commenting on Joan of Arc. She would have her peers commenting on her. And I actually had some musical ideas as well by the end of the first day. The only question I had at that time, because I was completely ignorant of the period, was whether or not there were any mystics at that time. So the next day I went to a bookstore called the Paraclete, which means Holy Spirit. It specialized in Catholic mystical writings. And I said, do you have any writings by female medieval mystics? And this nun, who was one of the salespeople there, pointed me to a shelf of around 35 books of writings by women mystics. And so I was in business. From then on, it was just a matter of following out the implications of those immediate decisions. And those decisions stemmed immediately from Dreyer's film. it really served as the inspiration for the project.
So who did you pick?
Well, the first one that I came up with was a woman who was not very well known at the time, but now she's become justifiably quite famous, and her name is Hildegard von Bingen. And at the time that I wrote Voices of Light, Hildegard's writings, which are truly, truly extraordinary, I put her in the same league as Dante, were almost completely unknown except for certain scholars. But she has this directness of appeal and this kind of beautiful, loving, sensuous language that's quite appealing. She also was quite a composer herself. A lot of her music has subsequently been recorded, and it's quite beautiful, these beautiful chants that are very, very unusual. In addition to that, Hildegard was a diplomat and was constantly consulted by kings in her time period for the resolution of disputes. And she was one of the main mystics. I also found a poet, a mystical poet from Joan's time, who may have actually seen Joan on one of her marches. And then I found some other people as well, including Dutch mystics, additional French mystics. I found a heretic who had been burned at the stake 100 years before Joan, who wrote beautifully these very, very strange visions of Christ, and that were quite apropos what I was trying to do. So it was really quite exciting. It was really, really quite a remarkable amount of research. I loved every minute of it. Frankly, it was a shame when I finally had to say, enough, I've got what I need, because I really could have read forever. It really was that interesting and enthralling.
Do you often, when you are composing, use visuals as inspiration?
That's a really great question. I've done a lot of film music, so of course you do visuals there. I've done a lot of dance too, but I've also written music that I thought was completely musical and was simply following out the musical logic that I was working with, only to find out that it's been choreographed by one person or another. In fact, almost all of my music has ended up being used in one visual way as another, either for dance or for theater or for film, etc., including the most abstract pieces of chamber music or of orchestral music that I've written. So I guess so. But when I was working with this project, essentially what I did was I analyzed the movie. I broke it down into 15 large scenes, and then I wrote music based on what I wanted to do within the theme of those scenes. But I didn't look at the movie while I was writing, except in a few very, very rare instances. So what I was trying to do was to create a kind of a parallel work of art, a work that was generated by the film, inspired by the film, but didn't Mickey Mouse the film in any kind of really literal way. And so the only thing I really was focused on was beginning and ending at a given time. And what happened in between is pure happenstance. As it turns out, though, there's a lot of really happy coincidences, and it works quite well with the movie, but Voices of Light has also been performed without the film and also been choreographed many, many times. In fact, I believe there's a new choreography being worked on right now in England.
Composer Richard Einhorn speaking with WVIA's Fiona Powell about his work for chorale and orchestra titled Voices of Light, inspired by the 1928 silent film The Passion of Joan of Arc. The movie will be screened with an accompanying performance of Voices of Light this Saturday evening and Sunday afternoon at the Campus Theatre in downtown Lewisburg, presented by the Susquehanna Valley Chorale under William Payne's direction. Fiona Powell spoke with William Payne about the production.
I had been hearing about this piece for a number of years, and I think basically because it's had such a great reputation. I mean, it's pulled in audiences in major concert halls throughout the world. And I just thought, you know, my board of directors, they're thrilled when I come up with different ideas and new and interesting ways to present choral masterpieces. So this was just a perfect match for us because we have this incredible theater in Lewisburg that has been totally renovated and restored back to its Art Deco times, and it just works. There's space for an orchestra and chorus and soloists to perform. That's how it all evolved. It's just an incredible piece of music, and I wanted to be sure to get it in our programming at some point, and this is the year to do it.
Speaking practically, I know the Campus Theatre, as will many, many of our listeners. How are you going to position everybody? You've got a film happening. You've got choral music happening.
Yes. The orchestra is strings and double flutes and oboes. So there's about 26 players. And for those that know the Campus Theatre, behind the audience is a rather large area that they use for receptions, sometimes after a performance, or they'll add chairs there for movies where they know they're going to get a large attendance. But it's space enough for us to perform behind the audience. So the audience will be watching the silent movie on the screen in front of them, and the chorus and orchestra and soloists will be behind, singing in sync with the movie.
That must present a unique set of challenges for you. For us as an audience, it sounds as if it's going to be fantastic. We're going to be completely enveloped in music as we watch this incredible, incredible film. And if people haven't seen the film, boy, this is one of those films that I say, you have to see this at least once or twice in a lifetime.
Yeah, it's a masterpiece. You know, Roger Ebert said that it was probably the greatest silent movie of all time, and I tend to agree.
So for us, it's going to be a delight, but I should imagine it presents all kinds of interesting challenges for you and the chorale.
For the chorale, they're going to be virtually in darkness. So that meant we had to purchase lights for each of the folders so that they can have downlighting into the music. They will be seated through the whole performance. They'll be singing in chairs because there's periods of time where the soloists are singing and it's just easier logistically to have the choir just stay seated. I will be raised up on a platform and then the orchestra will be in front of me and the chorus, and I will have a monitor. So I will be viewing the movie while conducting. And I have cues that tell me that I should be at this point in the music when Joan is looking up or when the judges are all in place for the trial. And because there are titles, when the actors are speaking, as in any silent movie, then a text comes up so you know what they're talking about. So those are cued in the score as well. Yeah, it's a challenge, but a wonderful challenge.
The singers have the double challenge. It can't be easy. I know I've tried it myself. Singing from a seated position, you've got
That's
to really control your voice.
Absolutely. They need to be virtually on the edge of their seats the whole time. This piece really requires musicians that have focus and concentration. And we've talked about that because I said, if for some reason we get out of sync, there are places where there are grand pauses or where I can bend a little bit, either speed it up or slow it down. And so they need to be aware of that. I actually had a private screening for the chorus and any of the instrumentalists that wanted so that they could watch the movie before they actually did it to perform it, because they can't really watch the movie and be concentrating on the music. They need to trust me that I'm in the right place.
I've seen the film a couple of times, and I should imagine another challenge, and it's a good job they can't watch the film, because the other challenge is it is such an emotional film. I've seen it twice and sobbed both times.
Oh, I know. It is. And amazing, because every time I watch it, and I probably by the time we do the performance next weekend, I will have watched this movie 50 times, if not more, as I study my score. And I see things in the movie every time that I didn't catch prior to that. And it's amazing. And the emotional part of it is, it's so poignant. There are places where musically he gets it, just kind of all comes together in sync so beautifully, and so the music just adds to this movie. I mean, the movie stands by itself alone, but when you see it and hear the music with it, it's absolutely amazing.
You do like working with live composers, don't you?
I do. I try to include live composers every year, every season. I think it's important. And Einhorn has been incredibly present for us. Whenever I have a question, I will email him or call him, and he's back answering my question immediately. It's been amazing for me to have that experience, to have that interaction with a living composer, and that has happened on numerous occasions when I've done other works.
It's very exciting, but it also must present some unique challenges. After all, if you're working with a piece by somebody long gone, you can you can do your own thing, as it were. They're not going to come and tap you on the shoulder.
That's right, exactly. But he understands a musician, the parts of them that they put into the music, and I think that that's what is so unique about this piece, is that he draws from elements of the Middle Ages, and he creates that atmosphere of plain chant and bare harmonies, and also uses dance rhythms throughout, so there's some freedom for expression. And on the other hand, I think he doesn't want it to be sentimental. He wants the movie to kind of speak for itself and let the music be fairly direct and expressive, but accurate. I'd love to just mention our four soloists because they are incredible. Working with these four people is something that's going to be really an experience, not only for myself, but for the chorus and the audience. Soprano soloist is Emily Martin, who is now at Bucknell University. The mezzo is Diana Grabowski, who is now at Susquehanna University. Stephen Ng is at Westchester University. And Brian Mexdorf is a Williamsport native and is now singing in New York City and quite successful. We're very blessed to have these four singers with us.
William Payne, music director and conductor of the Susquehanna Valley Chorale, speaking with WVIA's Fiona Powell about the special presentation this weekend. The Susquehanna Valley Chorale will offer Voices of Light, a work for chorale and orchestra by Richard Einhorn, who also spoke with Fiona Powell, and that's this Saturday, March 11th at 7:30 p.m., and again Sunday, March 12th at 2 in the afternoon at the Campus Theater, 413 Market Street in downtown Lewisburg. The performance will feature the soloists that William Payne mentioned, and for more information on the web, svcmusic.org, svcmusic.org. Tickets are available online through the phone, area code 570-547-0455, 547-0455, or at the door. The Susquehanna Valley Chorale presenting Voices of Light by Richard Einhorn with the screening of the silent film from 1928, Carl Dreyer's The Passion of Joan of Arc, Saturday, March 11th at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, March 12th at 2 at the Campus Theater, 413 Market Street in downtown Lewisburg. Parental guidance is suggested. For more information on the web, svcmusic.org, svcmusic.org.